This program is a paid commercial announcement and in no way represents the views of WPHT or its management.
Hi, everybody. Welcome again to Recovery Radio. My name is Steve Martirano. We're here on Saturdays. We talk about the disease of addiction and the many paths to recovery and sobriety. Recovery Radio is sponsored by Retreat, Premier Addiction Treatment Centers. We have more about them straight ahead. One of the things we find very powerful about talking about the disease of addiction is when we talk about it from a first-person perspective. There's enormous value, we think, in hearing people's stories of substance abuse, addiction, and how they managed, as millions of people do, to find their way out of this and lead long-term, productive, sober, successful lives. To that end, we welcome Sean Rogers with us to the program today. Sean's a 32-year-old fellow who has spent a good deal of his young life battling the disease of addiction, first his own, and then later helping others with his work in the treatment and recovery field. Sean Rogers, welcome to Recovery Radio.
Thank you, Steve. I'm happy to be here, and I really appreciate everything you just said, because it's really important that we talk about the hope in recovery.
Well, we appreciate your time and your openness about this. You know, I say this a lot on the program, that all stories of substance abuse and recovery are the same, except they're different. So tell us about Sean Rogers. You know, begin at the beginning. Where are you from?
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm a guy that grew up in Delaware County, just like any other, young man. I grew up with aspirations of, you know, being a professional hockey player, being a professional ball player, maybe being a lawyer, a doctor. But I never grew up thinking I wanted to be an addict when I got older. I'm the middle of five children, and I came from a pretty good family. My parents did everything they could to raise us in a way that built character and really set us up for success in life. And I just, one thing I can tell you about my life and the course of my life as it took off from a young age is that I always had this feeling of, not fitting in, this feeling of not feeling a part of, even from a very young age. And one of the things that I talk about a lot is that, as a young guy, I kind of got involved in sports because, I really wanted people to like me. And I figured I had to do something or have some type of a skill set to be liked. So sports was like my main outlet until I was about 12, 13 years old. And then, the usual teenage stuff starts to take off and, smoking cigs behind the school or, drinking a beer here or there, or, smoking a little pot. And, next thing you know, I realized that I could be the cool kid at that and I could fit in with different groups and, not only be the cool kid at that, but also, be somebody, who I was okay with, because, I had a lot of difficulties from a young age. I mentioned that my parents did everything they could to set us up for success. But unfortunately in my very early years, my parents went through a nasty divorce. I think that had a big effect on my mental mindset, because I saw a lot of things at the age of 3 to 6 that I don't think most 3 to 6 year olds see. And what happened was when I cracked that first beer, and when I got drunk for the first time, all those thoughts and of not being good enough and not fitting in, they all just quieted in an instant. And what I didn't realize at the age of 12 or 13 years old is that I was going to chase that effect for the next 13 years of my life. And it was going to take me down some roads that, were pretty ugly. And what happened was that alcohol started to make decisions for me in my life, that I had no idea that it was going to just take over my life in a very short window of time. Just to give you an idea of like who I was at that age is I was getting ready to go to high school. And I was, I loved playing ice hockey. It was my first love of my life. I really wanted to go to prep school. I went to Cardinal O'Hare down here in Delaware County. And I got with my counselor my freshman year of high school. And I said, what do I need to do to get into prep school up north to play ice hockey? And you know, how do I need to get my academics up so I can even get accepted? And so I was pretty focused at a young age as to what I wanted to do with my life and how I was going to pursue my goal. And by the end of my freshman year, I had already had an underage. I'd been arrested once. You know, I remember my counselor at the time, the guy was a saint. His name was Mr. Severance. And I remember by the end of my freshman year, he was sending notes out to have me come down and fill out this paperwork because I was on him in the beginning of my freshman year. And all I wanted to do was just go drink and get high. I didn't really care about that paperwork. I didn't really care about prep school anymore. And really all I wanted to do was find the next party scene and just hang out and be able to drink and use in a way that I could escape from myself. And you know, a lot of the things that we read and we understand in our field today is that like self-medication is a big thing. And I think I was really struggling with some mental health stuff. Yeah. And I didn't know how to express that to my parents. And certainly, you know, alcohol and drugs were the great escape for me.
Yeah. Sean, let me interrupt you for a second circle back to something that I find fascinating. From the outside perspective, you sound like, and I don't mean this in a negative way at all, like hundreds and hundreds of Delco kids.
Yeah.
Hundreds of Delco kids have fallen in love with the Flyers and have envisioned themselves, you know, playing hockey. And many of them aspire to go to the O'Hara, is that what you said?
That's right.
Cardinal Harris. So and who had five sibs who you know experimented with pot and maybe some beers growing up. When you now say you didn't feel like you fit in, is that something you were aware of while you were going through this, or is that something you came to appreciate? Do you know what I mean?
Steve, 100%. And the fact is I did not know I wasn't aware of it. You know, until I got sober and did a little work on myself and a therapist gave me a book to read and it was called Attachment. It was about attachment theories in life and not to get too deep down that rabbit hole, but, you know, I had some really, messed up attachments from a young age. My mother, I love her to death, but she was a partier and she wasn't really around that much. And then when the divorce happened, she kind of disappeared. So my point to that is that I always felt like I had let somebody down.
I see.
And I always was trying to make up for that. I was always trying to make other people feel good about me when I didn't know how to feel good about me.
What was going on with your brothers and sisters while you were heading down this path?
So that's a very good question. So I have two older brothers that are my real brothers from my parents' first marriage. And then I have two younger siblings that my dad got remarried and had kids with my stepmother. And the younger siblings weren't even born yet because they're a little bit younger than us. And the older siblings really honestly escaped in different ways. One of my oldest siblings was, you know, by the time we moved in with my dad and he got custody of us, he was off to college. I don't think he really ever dealt with it. It's something we talk about a lot because I'm really close to my oldest brother. And then my other brother, you know, he moved out right around the same time that I moved out, which is junior year of high school. And he went to live with a friend because he didn't. I think we all had really, in the nicest way possible, I think we all had really messed up coping skills from some of the stuff that we had experienced and went through.
So it looks like everybody was looking for an exit. Yours, unfortunately, involves drugs and alcohol. Take me through your drug history progression. You start like most kids, young kids, experimenting with beer and probably some marijuana. And at what age, that was it, like at 13, 12, 13?
Yes, that's correct. And one of the interesting things I like to point out, too, is that I was really against anybody, especially even in high school, that did pills. I used to call them pill poppers. They're losers. They're junkies. You know, you want to talk about a hypocrite. I became the ultimate hypocrite because I used to like, you know, talk a lot of crap on some of the guys who were doing some harder drugs. And I stuck to, you know, alcohol and marijuana. And I thought, these are normal. They're acceptable for my age. And really, honestly, not to jump too far ahead, but you know, I discovered Percocets when I was, you know, 21, 22 years old. And my whole entire existence just went straight off the side of a mountain.
Did you make it out of high school? Did you graduate?
I did make it out of high school. I always joke and I say I made it out of high school only because they wanted me the heck out of there. And I got a pretty funny story about that too. I was 30 years old 2 years ago. I started working in the behavioral health field, and I went back to my high school to do a presentation on substance use disorder and mental health. And in the middle of the presentation, one of the counselors stood up and she said, "Excuse me, Mr. Rogers, we're looking at your transcripts and we noticed that you never graduated from Cardinal O'Hara." And I said, I did. And she said, "Well, there's no stamp of approval that says you finally graduated from high school." And I said, "Well, I don't know what that's about." And she said, "Well, were you supposed to go to summer school? Like, what happened here?" And I said, "Yeah, I was supposed to go to summer school and I never showed up." And she said, "Well, today's your lucky day. You just graduated from high school." And she stamped the paperwork right in front of me.
Far out.
So yeah, I did make it out. I thought I was good back then, but I found out, 12, 13 years later that I actually didn't graduate. And I was given that, opportunity to do so through a small presentation I did about addiction.
Sean Rogers, our guest. Sean is, among other things, a recovery coach. We're going to find out that straight ahead. He's also involved in an organization called YPR, Young People in Recovery. He's started his own nonprofit in his old stomping grounds in Springfield in Delaware County. We have a lot more of Sean's story, his struggle with substance abuse. He's now 6 years sober and sharing it all with us here on Recovery Radio. Welcome back to Recovery Radio. We're speaking with Sean Rogers. Sean's a 32-year-old fellow who, as I said at the beginning of the program, has spent the better part of that young life battling addiction. First is, and now in the field helping other people with a similar disease. Sean, you're taking us through your downward spiral here of drugs and alcohol. So you get out of high school, and what comes next for you? Education and addiction.
Yeah, absolutely. So I graduated from Cardinal O'Hara by the skin of my teeth, and for the next year straight, I just kind of like worked job after job after job, and I continued to lose jobs as a result of my alcoholism, as a result of my addiction, and my mother, who I hadn't talked to a lot, had. She's an interior designer, and she found this school called the North Bennett Street School in Boston. It was a construction management trade school, and I was working in construction at the time, and she was just doing whatever she could to help out. So she said, "Why don't we put an application in, and I'll help you. We'll go up. We'll take a look at the school. If you like it, we'll help you to get into that school." And she did, and her and my father helped me to make that transfer up to Boston at the age of 19. I got into this construction management school, and really what I thought was that it was going to be a clean slate. I was going to start all over. It was just the people that were around me that were my issue, that were my problem, and that was the reason why I was acting out with drugs and alcohol, and that if I moved up there, I think my parents thought the same thing. If I moved up there, I would start all over, and I would get my life together. And
so at that point, they were aware that you were abusing drugs.
Not so much drugs; they just knew I had a drinking problem at that point. My drinking was kind of out of control, and I hadn't gone to college like all my other siblings, and I was kind of just hanging out and drinking all the time.
But you didn't consider yourself, nor did they, an alcoholic.
No, okay. Definitely not. Okay. I thought it was just my age, and I thought I was just kind of acting out.
So you go to Boston, and patterns continue, correct?
Yeah, I mean, things just got worse. I got accepted into a 1-year program. I completed that 1-year program, and at the end of the 1 year's one-year program, I thought to myself, I got to get out of here. Things are getting bad. I got to move back to Philly and get a job, and I'll start all over. I'll get out of this scenario that I'm in. And I moved back to Philadelphia, and I got a great job. I still don't know to this day how I got this job, but I got accepted into the union, Local 845, and I worked for a company that did museum work, and they stationed me in Quantico, Virginia to work on the National Marine Museum. And, the reason why this ties into my story a lot is because I worked for 7 months around the clock for this company, and nothing bad happened. And I wasn't drinking, and I wasn't abusing drugs, and things were going really good, and I was putting some money away. And in my head, I thought that was just a phase of my life. And what happened was they laid me off, and in between another job that we had in Virginia. And when I had that 2 month downtime, I went back to all the old behaviors and all the old, ways of drinking and using, and I couldn't even make it back down to get back on that job 2 months later, and I was let go by that company.
When you said you were riding along, doing well, not messing up on drugs or alcohol, making mm-hmm. nice money, living in Virginia, you felt like that. It sounded like you were saying you felt like that was an aberration, that that wasn't really what you were about. That you would sooner or later, you remember feeling that way.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think now looking back, all I did was I became a workaholic instead of an alcoholic. And I worked 80 hours a week, so I didn't have any time to mess up. But the second I was given any free time, I went right back to my vices, which were, marijuana and alcohol at the time. And the sad part is I was given a 2 month basically break to collect unemployment and come back to work. And I couldn't even get back to work after 2 months of having so much downtime.
Mm. How quickly did you spiral into heavier drug use?
So about a year after I lost that job, I discovered Percocets and painkillers of different sorts. And that was the ultimate spiral. That started the real spiral down into the depths of my addiction. Because after a time, I would say 3 or 4 years in, at the age of 25, I was doing pretty hard drugs insofar as like Oxycontin 80s. And I was really just that's all that mattered in my life. And it led to a pretty bad car accident in April of 2011, which put me in the hospital. And then I ended up going to my first treatment center right after that hospital stint in April of 2011, which was Miramont Treatment Center in Media, Pennsylvania.
Yeah, the accident got you to your first treatment attempt. Why? Did it scare you? What was your mindset?
No, it's because the cat was out of the bag. The whole family knew at that point in time that I was using and abusing some pretty hard drugs. In fact, they knew a year prior to this accident and tried to get me to go to treatment. I refused, and kind of just went my own way. And then when I got into the accident and I woke up in the hospital bed the next day, the whole family was there. It was an embarrassing moment for me. Mm. I actually ended up fleeing the scene of the accident and running to my dad's office where I was arrested by the state cops. Cause I was trying to hide underneath the desk in his office about a mile down the road. So it was more like guilt, shame, embarrassment. Like I can't do anything right at the age of, 25 it was. And I went to treatment I felt so lost in life. I felt so lost because I didn't even know what was happening.
Welcome back to Recovery Radio. We'll pick up our conversation with Sean Rogers straight ahead, but I want to do as I do each and every week and give you a phone number. This is the sort of phone number that we hope you never use, and we mean that sincerely. It's the phone number for Retreat, Premier Addiction Treatment Centers. Listen, they're a world-class organization. Their reputation is out there, and they are proud of it. But they tell me every week, give them the phone number. We're here to answer questions. Any questions you have about anything you've heard on this program or any questions you have about the disease of addiction, paths to recovery, they will answer those questions for you. This is a place to turn and get some advice. And as I said, world-class treatment as well. 855-859-8808. That's how you reach Retreat. 855-859-8808. Sean Rogers has been speaking with us about his struggles with substance abuse. He's a young guy who probably spent two-thirds of that young life either in active addiction or struggling to get out of it. He managed that successfully now 6 years ago, and now he works in the field as a recovery coach and with a couple of organizations we're going to find out about more later in the conversation. But Sean is taking us through his active addiction phase. So this accident, this horrible accident, automobile accident, and the subsequent legal problems involved in leaving the scene force you into your first treatment effort. How did that go? Yeah. How did that go for you?
It actually went pretty well. So one of the things that I learned when I was in treatment is that young people all over were getting clean, were getting sober. So treatment really introduced me to a whole scene that I always joke with people. It's like the underground scene until you're part of it, of recovery. And I learned a lot about addiction, I lost the power to make this choice a long time ago, and that I needed a program to help me with this. So I was in treatment for 38 days, which is a pretty long stay. Man, how things have changed. And so that was April of 2011 till May of 2011. And when I got out, I took the suggestions that the treatment center had provided for me, and I got a sponsor. I got a home group. I started going to meetings, and I spent that summer just going to a lot of meetings because I was now unemployed because I was let go from my job. And I just had a ton of time on my hands, and I really just tried to keep myself busy with going to AA. And I don't even know why I made that conscious decision. It was just, I think I was just hanging out with people that were in treatment. And what I didn't do that I wish I had done looking back, you know, but hindsight's always 20/20, is that I wish I would have worked with my sponsor, and I wish I would have went through the steps, but I didn't do that. I just had a sponsor by name, and unfortunately about 90 days into sobriety for me the first time, I ended up picking up with a guy that I was in treatment with. I relapsed, and it took me from July of 2011 till December of 2011 to get back to the rooms of AA. And I went back to treatment the second time in December of 2011.
Yeah, at that point, were you an IV drug user?
So I was not. In fact, I had never even done heroin yet. And I say yet because in October of 2011, I started to become an IV user, and I started to do heroin for the first time.
Tell me about that.
So the last...
Tell me about that decision, if it's fair to call it a decision. Why go?
Listen, it is a decision. It's a financial decision is what it is. And I try to explain this to parents all the time, is that I could no longer afford to keep up with the pill market. And heroin was just much cheaper and more accessible. So as funny as it sounds, and it's not that funny, but it becomes a financial decision at that point in time. I was working a measly job waiting tables, and I had to make sure that money lasted enough so I didn't get sick. And I started to snort heroin in October, and by November I was shooting heroin. And the last month of my run was just a miserable existence. I didn't want to do these things anymore. I didn't want to go to these places any longer, but I also didn't want to get sick. So I was caught in this place where everything in my life was being destroyed, and I continued down this path of destruction.
Where are you living at? What was your living arrangements as this descent was going on?
Horrible. I had gotten kicked out of the house that I was renting a room in October of 2011. I moved in with a buddy who was going through a divorce, who was in NA and was clean, and he had no idea I was using in his household. And then he and his wife were going to get back together, so he asked me to leave in a polite fashion. Like, I had to pack my stuff and go. And I begged my parents to let me sleep in their basement. They had no idea I got kicked out of my house in October. And I just told them that I made up a fictitious story that I had a new place that was coming. The lease didn't start till January 1st, and I needed a place to stay for about 20, 30 days. And could I please stay on the couch in the basement until, you know, I get into this place? And begrudgingly, they said yes. And, you know, when I moved back in, everybody was under the assumption that I was still clean and sober from treatment the first time. And within 2 weeks, my stepmother's, she's pretty sharp, and she figured it out within 2 weeks that I definitely wasn't clean. And that I had some weird behaviors and patterns going on. And I think she really wanted to confront me, but she wanted to wait till Christmas was over because she didn't want to ruin Christmas for the family.
Right. So, did you overdose at any point during this process?
Thank God, Steve, I never did. I never had that experience. I'm grateful for that because unfortunately I deal with a lot of people and families that deal with either an overdose coming back to life or an overdose where they lose their loved one.
So you get, obviously there's a second visit to a treatment facility in your future here. What got you there that second time?
It was just a bunch of guys in AA. So the night of Christmas, horrible. I went to my parents, obviously I was living at my parents. So I go to my parents and, for dinner that night, I'm at my parents and my whole family knows at this point, they can just tell by the way I look. I'm 40 pounds lighter. I'm white as a ghost. I look like crap. And, I always tell this story. I don't think it's funny, but, I kind of told my brother and my dad that I was doing really good, that I got a promotion at work. And, they just looked at me with this look of like, you're delusional, dude. Like, you need to get help.
Right.
And the next night I went to a meeting at St. Mark's in Clifton Heights, which is not too far from my parents' house in Springfield. And I put my hand up in the front row and I just said, I can't stop using and I don't know how to. And a bunch of guys from that meeting stood with me outside on the smoke break and helped me get a bed and treatment the next day. And they even were kind enough to go to my old house, which I got kicked out in October and I had all my furniture at, and helped me move it into storage the next morning. And then they took me straight to treatment December 27th of 2011.
And that was 6 years ago. You're sober since then, correct?
That's correct. That was the last day. Well, the night before was the last night I used.
What do you tell people? And I know you do. You talk to a lot of people about your struggles and now your sobriety. What do you tell people who stand in front of you as you did and say, I can't stop?
Right. I tell them I can relate. I tell them that there was a time and period in my life for a couple years before I actually did stop that I felt that exact way. And then, for me, it became very simple, and I didn't know it at the time, and it didn't feel simple at the time. It felt like I was getting ready to climb Mount Everest. But, what happened next was that I kind of just stopped making decisions in life, and I let life happen in a meaningful way. I took some direction from some professionals in the field, and I left that treatment center, and I went into a recovery house in Levittown. And I was in that recovery house for what I thought was going to be 30 days. And I was there a year and a half later as a recovery house manager, helping out guys, and that was the true transformation. It wasn't, treatment was great, but it was getting out and then actually applying what I learned in treatment and going through the steps with the sponsor and giving back to other human beings that were coming in and feeling broken at that front door, the same way I felt when I came into that recovery house.
And
that
was
the magic for me.
You think that saved you?
I know that saved me. I know that it taught me a whole new way of life. It taught me that it wasn't about me. It was about other people. And as long as I focused on other people in a compassionate, loving way, that my life would take off tenfold. And I know that to be true today.
Well, yours is, as I say all the time, these stories are all the same, only different. Yours is very inspiring. I mean, 6 years is a major achievement. Congratulations on remaining sober.
Thank you.
Are you confident that you can keep sober, stay sober?
Today, yeah, absolutely. As long as I do everything today that I was taught on day one, I'll be fine.
So tell us about...
I try not to look too much further past that.
Yeah. Tell us about this pivot when you realize service is what not only is needed for you personally, but a good idea for everybody else. Tell us about your work as... First of all, what's a recovery coach?
So two questions. The recovery coach is something that's very new to me in the past year. And it's as I was describing to a gentleman the other day, it's literally that passion that people talk about when I'm able to have the opportunity to work with a client. It really lights me up from the inside. But going back even further, when I realized service was so pertinent and important, I was 6 months sober in a recovery house, and I had gone through the steps pretty quickly with a sponsor. And he said, it's now time to start sponsoring guys. And it's time to give this thing back. It's the only way that we hold on to this gift that's given to us through AA. And I was terrified to sponsor guys. I thought, how the heck am I going to take a guy through this? And that gentleman made it real simple for me. He said, just do exactly what I showed you, right? And that thus started the journey for me of wanting to help people in this world, because I found great joy in going in a very altruistic way and sitting down with another gentleman and watching him cry to me that, like, I don't know how I'm going to get out of this hole. And I could say, hey, listen, I was there. I know exactly what you're talking about. And you're going to get out of this hole, because I felt the same way not too long ago. So as long as I keep doing that, everything else in my life gets better as a byproduct. And with recovery coaching, it's a little bit different. We're not talking about doing the steps. We're talking about real life orientation, real life skills. Recovery coaching is something that I discovered by accident. I was at a private practice and they were doing a whole little seminar with another treatment facility about how do we help individuals integrate into the real world out of treatment and do it in a positive manner where they have the proper oversight and give them the opportunity to approach all the roadblocks that they feel are blocking them from getting up and going in life, whether it be building a resume or getting a job or how do I interview or yeah. what do I do here? How do I manage my finances? So right. recovery coaching goes a little bit deeper.
Life sort of gets in the way of all that stuff. Anyway, Sean Rogers, yeah. Sean Rogers, a recovery coach and a member of the Young People in Recovery organization. Sean is a 6 years sober now. He's a recovery coach, and he's going to tell us about a couple of other organizations that he has gotten involved with. One he started, and one which is growing, as I understand it, all over the country. Sean, tell us about Young People in Recovery. YPR. Who are they, and what do they do?
Yeah, absolutely. So YPR, Young People in Recovery, is a national grassroots organization that was started out of Denver, Colorado, by a gentleman named Justin Luke Riley. And his vision was to help create recovery-ready communities all across the country and really help to make sure that we have a voice at the table when it comes to any bills or rights that are being mandated around recovery itself and any type of legislation that's being passed either on a local, state, or federal level. And Justin is definitely, whether he knows it or not, because we don't talk all the time, we talk a couple times a year, but he's definitely a mentor to me. I watch his work. And Justin had a very cool moment where he had to sit down with Barack Obama and really had about 90 minutes of his time to talk about recovery, and thus it created this boost of YPR really being a part of the big conversation as to how we're going to approach this epidemic on a national scale.
Let's talk about this, the idea of sober, or how did you describe it, recovery-ready communities. When you say communities, yeah. you mean a whole geographical area. Like a town.
That's correct. So we have currently, when I say we, I mean YPR has over 78 chapters in the country. Philadelphia is one of the largest chapters in the country, and I sit on the board or the committee for the Philadelphia chapter of Young People in Recovery. My responsibility, my duty, is to be the fundraising chair, because we are a nonprofit. It's all volunteer work. I don't get paid for that work. But what YPR did for me, Steve, was really introduce me to a whole nother life, a whole nother career. Because I started doing this nonprofit work and raising funds for YPR with other treatment centers like Retreat and other facilities around the Philadelphia area. And what happened was a lot of people got to know me. I got to know them. And thus people started saying, like, hey, you should work in this field full time. It seems like you're really passionate about this work that we do over here in recovery in the behavioral health sector. So YPR kind of bridged the gap for me and brought me over to this field 3 years ago full time.
And what kind of events or projects does YPR do?
So we do a couple different things. We do workshops in the community for people in recovery to talk about housing and finance and education and help people get back on the road to recovery, in essence, and accomplish their goals. But one of the things that I love doing, and that stuff's very important, it's extremely important. We have somebody who's head of all those workshops. I do more special events. So I do, we just had a big comedy show at Westchester University this past Saturday night that I did. It's a series. It's called Stand Up for Recovery Comedy. A buddy of mine runs three comedy clubs in New York City, and he gets people to come down here to do stand up for us in a professional manner. We had 400 people show up at Westchester University, And what we do with those comedy shows is we use them as fundraising events, but we also use them as opportunities to partner with universities in the Philadelphia area, because we took a portion of the funds and we donated it back to Westchester University so they can help to fund the proceeds for their collegiate recovery organization to create safe, sober spaces on campus and create more awareness around recovery at the university level. We did that with Villanova. We did that with Newman University. And we're getting ready to do that with Widener University later on this year. And on top of doing the comedy shows, we do a golf outing once a year. We do a paintball event. We just did an axe throwing event in Philadelphia. So we try to do fun, sober events to show people that recovery is not the end. It's the beginning of the rest of your life.
Well, whoever told you that you probably should be devoting more of your time to this work wasn't kidding. If that weren't enough, I know you started your own nonprofit in your old hometown. Tell me about Springfield's Cares.
I did, and I really can't take full credit for it. Commissioner of the 6th Ward in Springfield, Delaware County, Jeffrey Rudolph, called me about 2 years ago, and he said, we see the work you're doing on Facebook, and we need something in our hometown to talk about recovery and to provide a resource to the community if somebody struggles with addiction. And he said, would you be interested in helping us form this committee? And really, honestly, this committee turned into something that none of us could have even imagined. So we started this committee called Springfield Cares Coalition. We started doing different town hall meetings within the township. And the superintendent of the township got really involved with us, Anthony Barber, and really loved what we were doing and gave us a great opportunity to partner with the school system. He brought me in to a school board meeting in January of 2017 and had me make a presentation to the school board as to why it is important for young adults to have the education and curriculum instituted into their daily, their daily schedules about substance use disorder, about mental health, and why it's okay to ask for help. And he allowed myself and the school board to partner with a third-party organization called Minding Your Mind, that is now in all the health classes from sixth grade up in Springfield, talking about addiction in a positive manner and where to go for help if you or a loved one ever struggles. So that was a big win for us, and we never even envisioned that coming about.
Well, if there is any silver lining in the current epidemic with regard to substance abuse in this country, it is that we are seeing efforts like yours on a local level springing up all over the place. It's a realization, I believe, of communities because of guys like you saying, we can't sit around waiting for somebody else to solve this for us. We've got to do it ourselves.
Right.
Sean Rogers, thanks so much for sharing your story with us and for your work and your continued sobriety. We'd love to have you back on.
Absolutely, Steve. Thanks for having me.
Our pleasure. Everybody, thanks for joining us again this week on Recovery Radio, and please look for us every Saturday. Take care. Bye-bye.
This program is a paid commercial announcement and in no way represents the views of WPHT or its management.